Hey, so before we get started on this next episode, I just want to invite everyone listening to send us an email. You can send us an email at deartaiwanpodcast@gmail.com. If you have any questions you want to ask about Taiwan, want to suggest episode ideas, or just want to say hey, we'll even answer your questions in the next episode. 英文、中文都可以, Chinese or English are both okay. Very curious who's been listening so far. We look forward to hearing from you. Hey everyone, it's Teacher Joseph here. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Dear Taiwan podcast. This is the first in a two-part series, the first part being things that Taiwan does better than the USA. Later on, we'll have an episode about the opposite. And I was lucky enough to be joined by my Taiwanese friend Bob, or Bo Yi, on this podcast. A fair warning, there was actually some audio problems that we had during the recording time of this podcast, but I hope that all of the points that we bring up are worthwhile for you to deal with some of the audio quirks that happen in your headphones. Sorry about that. And without further ado, let's get started. All right, and today on the Dear Taiwan podcast, we are very, very lucky to be joined by an actual, real-life Taiwanese person this time to talk about a topic that, well, having come from a very different country and living in this country of Taiwan for such a long time, I can't help but compare the two. Our topic today is five things Taiwan does better than America. And our guest today is my Taiwanese friend, Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
I'm very happy to have you on the podcast. So a lot of our listeners know that I'm American and I've lived in Taiwan for about 9.5 years now. But am I right in saying you're Taiwanese and you also lived in America before?
Yes.
Yes. So how long did you actually live in America and about how old were you?
Well, 6 years in total and several visits. I went there my senior year in high school as an exchange student, then just never looked back, graduate from college, worked there for a year, then come back. So totally 6 years.
Okay. And then, so there's high school, college, and then you worked there. What did you actually do there for work?
I was in grade 5 elementary school teacher for a year. Yeah. Well, that's basically my major. So
there's that. Yeah, and for our listeners, Bob and I are both coworkers at our school, and we got to know each other both on a shared interest of hiking and commiserating on the stress of the job. So there's that.
Yeah, stress of the job is definitely shared. Yeah,
definitely. So only 1 year in the U.S. What made you come back?
Mainly for doing the service, the military service. Well, for me, it wasn't military. I did the alternative service instead, but don't want to play around the rules and stay abroad for 20 years. So I just decided to come back, get it out of the way, then explore my opportunity then.
But that's something that I should add to my long list of differences between Taiwan or things that I notice is that Taiwan does have mandatory military service, even still, though right. Not everyone has to be trained in the military to meet that requirement. You right. Taught in a school, right?
Yes, I worked for a school for a year. Yeah.
But that was, again, government posted. So Bob had 6 years living in the U.S. I have 9 years living in Taiwan. So obviously we both are kind of in a good position to compare the two. So across two episodes, I'm hoping, and again, thank you again, Bob, for joining for this, hoping to list five things Taiwan does better than the U.S. in this episode. And then later we'll do five things America does better than Taiwan. And starting off with the crown jewel, one of Taiwan's most enticing details of the country, convenience stores. Always gotta start small. We'll go big later. But
sure,
I for me personally, I rely on convenience stores so much for so many things. The fact that they're safe, clean, Open 24 hours a day, offer an insane amount of services everywhere imaginable, even in the most remote mountain villages sometimes.
Right.
They are just amazing, and they blow American convenience stores out of the water. Like, there's just so much to be said about such a kind of a small topic. What's the last thing you did at a convenience store, Bob?
I think getting some kind of bill paid or getting, yeah. But there's right. a kiosk in the 7-Eleven or in all the convenience stores, actually. So the kiosk itself, it can do so many things. I mean, what was the last one you did on the kiosk?
Right. So speaking of paying bills, you can also buy train tickets. I actually re-up my phone's data plan every month, which I know I can have a plan to do it automatically, but that involves going into the actual telecom company office and filing paperwork, and I'm too lazy to do that. Mm. you can call a taxi from like a registered trustworthy company from 7-Eleven. You don't have to necessarily use an app on your phone.
Right. You can buy Bitcoin using kiosk nowadays.
Yeah. I haven't done that, but my coworkers are talking. How do you do that?
I have no idea. I need to get into that too.
This will quickly devolve into a Bitcoin podcast because God, people talk so much about that. But yeah. And for our listeners, this is just one single computerized kiosk in the corner of 7-Eleven or Family Mart, High Life, OK Mart. And there's a fifth one too called Million, but that's much less common.
Right.
There's a photocopier that you can do cheap color printing there. You can pay your parking tickets and highway tickets there.
Basically, any kind of tickets, even like concert tickets, you know, theater, musical, you know, shows tickets.
You can actually order you can get your government stimulus checks that the Taiwanese has kind of sent out, and the government themselves sends out programs through convenience stores. That speaks to how like ubiquitously used they are. One of the first things I noticed about convenience stores is that anytime you gotta go to the ATM, you go to a convenience store, which American convenience stores by and large don't have that. Of course, America is a bit less of a cash-based society because of, you know, some safety concerns, which we'll get to. But I mean, even beyond like the services they offer, there's like so many things that you can buy there or do there that are so much different from the U.S. Like, you're never going to get freshly roasted sweet potatoes in the U.S.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of fresh stuff. Well, what was the convenience store? Wait, some of the convenience store in the States, they have delis, right? Or some kind of like a fried food area.
That is true, actually. In my area in Massachusetts, it's not uncommon to see a convenience store with like a Subway or a Blimpie inside.
Wait, is it attached to it, or it's the convenience store itself?
That's the thing. It's often like some kind of like, I hesitate to say joint venture because that's like not the right term, but that's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
Convenience store itself doesn't really own it. They just rent the space out.
Right, that's different in Taiwan, though, because, well, most of the fresh food, the hot food, they basically made it in-house, and, yeah, they sell it, you know, in the convenience store.
Yep. Yeah, you're talking, like, fresh-made salads, fresh-made rice boxes or rice lunch boxes.
Right, or even the, what's it called, Guangdongzhu, they're like a hot
Oden, thing? I'm pretty sure is what that's called in English, but no one knows what that is really. What is Guangdongzhu?
So hot soup for sure.
Hot soup with like some things steaming inside, kind of.
Right. Bunch of the hot pot ingredients, hot pot food basically.
Yeah, and even beyond that, like because these convenience stores are so ubiquitous, like people just kind of meet there for certain, you know, like they'll meet up for coffee there sometimes. They'll meet up to negotiate like a business deal. I met like a life insurance agent to take out a life insurance policy at the convenience store on the corner, which was probably sounds ridiculous to any American, because like, at least where I'm just growing up, like American convenience stores are known for like selling Slurpees, cigarettes, bad candy bars, hot dogs. I mean, magazines, but not anymore, you know, kind of soda.
Right. Oh my God. American stores are crazy, especially in the convenience store. Well, the thing is, the convenience store in U.S., at least the place I went to school, they're usually attached to a gas station, though.
That is very true. Yeah, you don't see that in Taiwan as much.
No, I mean, if not much, it's like not at all. I mean, yeah. I bet there are places like with, you know, a convenience store either attached to the gas station or very close to it. But most of the convenience store I know in the States, they run the gas station. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Definitely in my home area, I don't even know what it's called anymore, but like, yeah, they kind of, it is a joint venture.
Right.
Yeah, correctly.
Right. Yeah. But the fact that like in Taiwan, they say it's so hard not to find a convenience store within like 50 meters from one another, almost, you know, the places are literally three just in the same corner.
Yep. It just goes to show like how much Taiwanese people in their day-to-day lives kind of rely on convenience stores for so many more things above anything else.
Yes.
You know, like a convenience store in America is kind of like a last resort. Like you're not going to go and buy groceries there. You're not going to go and take care of like errands there.
Right.
Unless it's the middle of the night or whatever, you know.
Right. And one thing though, speaking of how connected our lives is in the convenience store, like they serve the function of UPS, like or USPS, or FedEx. Like
yes,
they're the drop-off point for a lot of packages, and then I mean, and then the places you can send the packages, you know. So there's that.
I have a theory about that actually.
I
noticed this only in the past few years. Like when I moved here in 2012, I didn't really notice package shipping as like a prime service that they offered, but it's really blown up recently, right?
It's definitely blown off so much more recently. Yeah. Yes.
It's to the point where like the High Life, which is the second convenience store by me, like they had to clear out this entire section where they used to sell packaged food or whatever.
Right.
Just to create like a package receiving area. I think that this is in response to the stupid amount of paperwork you have to write at the post office.
I mean, yes and no.
I mean, I guess it's also for like, you know, like package security, like when it arrives, it's under the watchful eye of the convenience store clerk. Whereas if you get it sent to your doorstep, like unless you have a guard in your building, which not everyone does, there's some risk of it being taken away. I don't know if that's common in Taiwan, people like stealing packages.
Like a porch pilot? Are you talking about that?
Yeah, something like that.
At least in my family, we don't let packages we don't say to the deliverer or mailman that just leave the package at the door. Usually we have somebody to pick it up and sign for it, though.
Yeah, and then like where I live, but like there's a guard who's there 24/7.
Right.
In like the very small complex, so like anything that's delivered is going to go past him. So anything else to say, especially about U.S. convenience stores?
Well, I just have fond memory of eating shit tons of pizza and fried food. Especially, okay, at the time, being the first year teacher and poor time management skill, I mean, even right now, but... kind of a procrastinator from time to time, that I will stay pretty late in school. Then the only convenience store, the gas station, that I went to, they usually have, you know, just fried food and pizza left. But that was fun memory for me in terms of U.S. convenience store. Other than that, nothing else. I mean, okay, when I was in New York, I don't even see a convenience store or anything close to that in Taiwan. So Yeah, my memory of U.S. convenience store is always, with gas station. I mean, that's just me though. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, that's kind of my memory too. Like even when a convenience store wasn't paired with a gas station, it was just, I don't know, nearby some giant parking lot because I don't know, it's just people are gonna just drive up and get something and then drive off. You know, it's not like you're gonna sit down, have breakfast, drink some coffee, pay some bills and run some errands there, and you're gonna say hi to everyone you know there. Like literally, like in my neighborhood in the Family Mart, there's like a group of retired old ladies that like every afternoon, at least before COVID, they were hanging out drinking like coffee or carton tea drinks at a table in Family Mart by the ATM. Just that's what they did.
Become a
Where
gathering point.
Yeah, exactly. And like it's very much perceived as safe. You're not gonna have like the clerk behind like some metal gate because they're worried about theft. It's all
Right.
open air, it's all bright. It's communal kind of, it's a
Right,
gathering
pretty much.
point. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, looking at the list, that's definitely something Taiwan does better than.
Let's go to that one next, actually, then. We've actually brought it up twice. It's actually number three on my list, but number two for now of things that Taiwan does better than America is just safety,
Right.
safety in general. I've read, years and years and years in a row, Taiwan always makes the, it's usually the top 10 safest countries in the world, up there with like Iceland and Japan and maybe Singapore. Safest in terms of the lowest violent crime rates. Safest in terms of the, I mean, I guess it is first and foremost, safest in terms of low crime rates.
For that one, I agree with you, but a lot of people in Taiwan. From Taiwan, they won't because, consider. I mean, you heard about the news, like people, the kid got beat up. Yeah, the one in Taichung. Oh, actually, there are several in Taichung, just in the past month, right? The kids got beat up just because they look at the other people the wrong way.
And so, like, it just goes to show that when one violent incident
Yeah.
happens in Taiwan, it's the headline of the news. Whereas
Right.
in the US, things like this happen, left and right, day to day, that it's only when there's a really big tragedy, like the this kid in Taichung, if I've read the news correctly, he swiped the side of a fancy car on his
Something like that.
scooter, and then the guys in the fancy car got out and just beat the crap out of him, and he had to go to the hospital. He thankfully didn't die. He's actually out of the hospital now. And of course, these guys, whomever they were, probably involved in some kind of organized crime or headed to jail, hopefully. But like the frequency of violent attack happening in Taiwan
It's
and it being
rare.
reported in the news is kind of the same as the frequency of like school shootings happening in the US and then being on the news. Maybe that's kind of an exaggeration, but like,
No, it's not.
right. Like, people mind their own business and they take care of their family
Right.
and they also are concerned about like their own reputation. So it really would take a lot to cause, and this is my opinion for the record, it's not a fact. I think it really would take a lot to cause a Taiwanese person to react violently in a way they really wanted to endanger others, differently from the way Americans try to just stick up for themselves in this kind of like old-fashioned chauvinistic way where they're not afraid of violence.
Right. Well, not to get too
Maybe.
political here, but I mean, I follow US politics and news quite often. And I mean, when I see the news of, the news about in Taichung, I mean, there are several incidents these days, like go on the news. For me, it was like for US, for once, for US, those will be on the local news.
Yes,
If
local news.
not mentioning at all, it will be local news, literally.
Yeah.
And you won't see that even on, I mean, maybe some of those will be on the news, but probably a lot of those were just on newspaper. The shootings, I mean, just happened So the US define mass shooting as in like four people, including the shooter, die or more, something like that.
Something
And
like that.
yeah, it happens almost once every single day by according to the statistics that I know
Yeah,
of. So
so often that it doesn't get reported in the news. You can actually like look
yes.
up statistics and it's like, oh, 2019, whatever, whatever, there were 500 shootings or whatever, whatever. And it's like, oh, that's more than one per day, right?
Yeah, and that's just mass shooting defined by four or more people die. In some of those incidents, it was horrendous, horrendous attack. And it was just like, compared to Taiwan, people got freaked out by those by a lot of baseball bats on the street or something like that. And
Yeah.
Facebook comments say that we should legalize guns. And, so this problem will not happen in Taiwan. It's like, are you guys insane?
But yeah, America, for better or for worse, has always had a very pro-gun culture. And whether or not you are a gun enthusiast or you're very much against guns, I think that everybody can agree that guns need to be regulated in a certain way. And I'm of the opinion that guns should be regulated in the same way cars are.
If
But
not more so.
yes, if not more so. I'm also very smitten and very happy to live in a country where I don't have to walk down the road and worry that somebody around me, because in Taiwan it's a very population dense country. There's always people around you.
Sure.
Worry that somebody could just pull out a gun and then cause an incident. Like it just doesn't have, and there are guns in Taiwan. The police have guns and the military have guns, and Aboriginal hunters have some kinds of guns as well. But
Right.
if you want to get a gun in Taiwan for your personal use, odds are you cannot.
Yeah. So tightly regulated.
Very, very, very tightly regulated. I had one student who told me, this is back in Taoyuan, that her dad had guns at home because he his career was something military associated. So it's like, okay, if you want to play with guns, you got to go in that direction, you know?
Right.
Aside from violent crime, one other thing that I think is interesting in Taiwan is that there's also a lower rate of petty crime. Now, I don't have like any numbers to back this up, but I so seldom read in the news of like burglaries or thefts or like I guess I actually do read in the news sometimes like sexual harassment does happen
Right.
unfortunately, but yeah, so few reportings of burglary or theft or vandalism.
Well, safety is definitely something that I think living in Taiwan is so fortunate. I mean, if you ask me right now, if I want to go back to the States, I would say no. And if you ask me why, then I'll say I just don't feel safe. I just don't feel safe anymore. I mean, petty crimes per se.
Now, I actually have been a victim of petty crime in Taiwan. I've had two bicycles stolen,
Ooh.
and they were not recovered by the police at all. But I mean, I've also had bicycles vandalized and stolen in the U.S. That's it across 9 years. I assume if I was living on my own in the U.S., more incidences would have happened, depending on the area I'm living in.
Right. Well, I got my bike stolen in the States too, so there's
There you
that.
go. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
In general, I cannot say definite, but in general, people seems just in general kinder. Not to say that they're no mean peoples, but at least for me, I mean, whenever people has issues, like truly needs help, quite often people jumps up. I mean, jump up and help people.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Have heard the argument that like, oh, Taiwanese people are only jumping up to try and help you out because you're the foreigner. No, I see Taiwanese people help each other all the time. For based off what you just said, I'm inclined to think that that's true. People are generally they want to help each other out. Maybe more so than the US?
Yes, I would say so. I
You would
mean,
say so. So do
yes.
you feel like Taiwanese people are equally helpful to you you yourself being Taiwanese?
Yeah. Like, I mean, sure, we're all strangers to everyone, but there's very little hostility straight away. That's in the States.
Right.
Sometimes you feel the hostility straight away. Not because I'm Asian, or it's just like in general, like the sense I got in the States is people tend to do away from getting close to anybody they are not familiar with.
Sure. Yeah. Some people say Americans are really friendly, and I actually say differently. I say Americans are just really social.
Right.
Sure, it's nice to be kind of welcoming just by what you're saying, or if you're, you know, passing someone in the streets. But when it comes to actually helping someone, Americans in a lot of ways might be lacking. Even walking through what is, you know, some of the poorest parts of the country, like there's, Wanhua District in Taipei is known as kind of a formerly a bit of a rough area, but even the two poorest parts in all of Taiwan are Wufeng Township, Hsinchu County, and Changbin Township, Taidong County. I've been to both. Nothing seems dangerous. Nothing seems intimidating. Nothing seems amiss aside from the fact that it's, you know, it's a mountain village and a fishing community. Nothing seems dangerous. Now, there's other sides of safety. Taiwan is notorious for having bad roads, bad drivers.
Traffic safety. That's total opposite for sure.
Total opposite. But did you know, apparently, and I'll have to find out the source, the road fatality rate in both Taiwan and the U.S. is about the same.
Sure.
Not the incidence rate, but the fatality rate is about the same. And there's other things in Taiwan that, like, are safety concerns. One of the big ones that comes to mind is typhoons and earthquakes, because they happen every year all the time. Mm-hmm. And sure, sometimes... The cat's back. Hi, Kirby. Sometimes typhoons, earthquakes really can cause some massive destruction.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was here when that building in Tainan toppled over.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever hurricanes hit the U.S., power's cut for days in that area. There's, you know, a lot of floods to deal with. Buildings are destroyed.
Yes. Well, you're talking about the infrastructures, right? I would have to agree with you on that. I mean, okay, this is something that I think probably you agree, or just my observation. Unless something major happened, people won't do shit about it. And it happens in Taiwan quite a lot, you know,
you
in terms
like...
of the government legislation and doing things, you know, better. I would say that laws has tightened so much now that a lot of constructions or the firms, architecture firms, they were not trying to mess with their constructions. You know, they were not cheap out their customers. All the steel building nowadays has to pass certain level of safety before. And there were times that fire, like death in the city, was so high. And
it's
then,
still actually pretty common in Taiwan for like there to be house fires, and because of renovations, certain apartments that, like, let's say there's one apartment unit that was renovated to become three apartment units.
Right.
There's not adequate fire escape routes, and people actually get trapped and die.
Right.
That is unfortunately still pretty common in Taiwan relative to other places.
That's usually the older buildings.
Yep.
Like older apartments. Like the new ones nowadays, fire codes has been updated, and I mean, even the new buildings nowadays, I don't think the construction firm, they want to mess with, you know, or they want to play around with the rules.
So actually my building right now is kind of exactly in the same situation, where like my unit was formerly half of a larger unit, so the landlord mm-hmm. cut it in half to make a, you know, it's a two-floor apartment that is now two separate apartments.
Right.
Because of that, they added a whole in-building fire hydrant and fire hose right outside my door that wasn't there before. Because for the listeners, in Taiwan, oftentimes the fire hydrants are actually built
into the buildings themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And one on every floor, different from the U.S. where they're kind of more on the street. Because oftentimes in Taiwan, you cannot get a fire truck down these small roads.
Right.
So I feel great that if there's an emergency, I know I have two points of exit, and there's a fire hydrant literally out my front door within arm's reach of the door.
Right.
Do I know how to use a fire hose? Not necessarily. But there's also four fire extinguishers that I know where they are. Older buildings, unfortunately, might not have that. There was the big incident in Kaohsiung recently, right? There was an incident where a multi-use building, part parking garage, part residential, part commercial building, caught fire, and a lot of the residents were elderly or mobility impaired. And because of the layout of the building and the infrastructure,
okay.
You remember this?
Yeah.
So there's some retrofitting that has to be done in terms of Taiwan's building safety that I think America kind of actually has had a bit of a jump on. Taiwan is more well prepared for natural disasters.
So I mean, in terms of safety, I guess when we made the list, now like think about this, like there are so many subcategories.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, safety is a very, very broad category. But I think on the whole, as someone who lives in Taiwan day to day or wants to visit Taiwan, you're probably more concerned about walking down the street at night and it being safe than you are mm-hmm. about a fire code that needs to be updated in an old building.
True.
I'm trying to think if there's any other subcategories of safety we need to mention. The big ones are just, you know, guns, theft, and the road, I suppose.
So yeah, I mean, personal safety-wise, I definitely think that Taiwan is way safer than the States.
How about police harassment? That's a big hot topic in the U.S.
Oh, okay. You know, I personally am very interested on that too. I'll subscribe to a channel called Audit the Audit, ATA. Basically, they took the clips and they analyzed how the police interaction was legitimate based on what law, or it's not legitimate based on what law. And okay. Watching that videos a lot of times. Okay, so the thing in Taiwan, I mean, I bet it still happens, but not as often,
right.
Is that police in Taiwan, they don't hold personal ego as high of a regard as the police in the States.
They really don't. They're really approachable
yes.
and friendly. Like
the
times I've had to approach the police for help, again, when I had my bike stolen or when, you know, like going to tell a police officer about something happening, you know, down the road over there. They're super cordial and
mm-hmm.
they're like talking to a regular person, though they have badges and guns and everything. One thing that I also noticed about Taiwan, and I don't know if this is just me being kind of oblivious, but like you see a lot of like young police officers too. A lot of police officers I see out on patrol are like younger than me. They
well,
seem like yeah.
You do have to understand Asian people tend to look younger. So
okay, fair point. You know, there's this stereotype of like, you know, the bald, gray-haired, fat cop eating a donut in the U.S. You know, who's like what 50 and. So, like, there actually was an incident, I think it was last year, and it was in Zhongli, where
right.
I used to live. And I don't know all the details, but there was some woman who was being stopped for questioning
uh-huh.
by Zhongli train station, and she refused to stop and answer the police's question or give ID. And the police officer kind of, like, got angry in an almost a very American police officer kind of way.
Uh-huh.
Tried to forcibly detain her. Now, this is one incident of forcible detention in the country. And it made national news, and that police officer was suspended just by trying to grab her hands and push her to the ground. That is something that the American police officers do all the time.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. That's like nothing. But just by fact that the police officer, one officer used some semblance of force on someone that wasn't also using force
mm-hmm.
made national news. Well, hey, there we go. That's an example.
I don't know. That's before breakfast in the States, right?
I shouldn't laugh at that, but it's true.
It is very true. Looking at only watching the news, again, personal bias, but police in Taiwan or people in Taiwan are more prone to follow the regulation, provided that the regulations, the laws, are not deeply challenged.
Except while driving.
Yes. So there's that.
But I mean, you're totally right. You're totally right.
This one's a little bit sidetracked to the police, but going back to talking about another thing that Taiwan's, I personally think it's better than the States, but it's not on the list, is the fact that the government monitors itself much, much better than the States.
That is actually a fair point. You are so right. The government has a whole fourth branch.
Yes.
I'm not sure to what extent they still do it, but they have to monitor everything. It's not that they're approving things. They're just like checking up on things and following up on things to make sure things are done fairly, separately from the courts.
Right.
Is that fair to say?
Yes, very much so. So let me find the English for that. One of the branch that in Taiwan, control yuan, so control branch, right? You're right.
Yeah.
Control branch itself, they are totally separate from executive branch, right?
Executive yuan, yep.
Yeah, executive yuan, which is the one that control the police. So quite often, if people messed up, if people in the government messed up, or like police, the control yuan will hammer down on them fast. And I mean, quite often, even before that, right? Because people nowadays have cell phone, all the monitoring, and then things goes on the news so fast that the police, unless in circumstances like needed, they usually constrain themselves on how much force they use to solve the problem. And this is another thing, maybe it's the culture itself or the training by design, that police in Taiwan, they try to de-escalate things first before they have to escalate the problem to like using bigger force. So, which is total opposite than the States in many of the cases.
In many of the examples, yes, but in the training, actually, technically, no.
Really?
Except that like the training is one thing, then the way policing is carried out is a different thing. I actually worked for a police station before moving to Taiwan.
Okay.
Worked with New York State licensed police officers. And though it was around the campus community and stuff, it wasn't like a full city precinct or whatever. It was more local jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And the more senior officers would always, when they would give trainings, they would always say, like, you know, basically what you said, you have to de-escalate. That is your prime goal. Your prime goal is also safety of yourself and everybody around you. And you should never use more force than is being used on you. That is what the senior officers would say. Now, is that what every officer in the U.S. believes at all times? Well, that's what they're taught. It doesn't change the fact that incidences keep happening.
Right. So
I wonder how much of Taiwan's more friendly and welcoming policing is just due to the restructuring of policing after martial law ended. Like the police, I assume, and I wasn't here, I mean, I wasn't even born yet. I assume the police kind of had to reintroduce themselves to the public as a governing body invested in the public's well-being and safety, not just to serve the government. I don't know.
Yeah, actually, I have no question I have no answer on how the police was reformed after the martial law ended.
Yeah, because martial law ended in 87, so like,
before I was born.
Right, before I was born too, and obviously I wasn't here, so I'm going to have to do some research into that. I'm really just deeply fascinated by Taiwan's sharp transition to democracy and everything that kind of came with that. And how Taiwan was, and I mentioned this in a previous podcast, how Taiwan was a wholly different society only 35 years ago. And how it's it is freer and safer and more democratic than the U.S. Hey, we've been talking for a while about safety. Let's healthcare. You all knew it was coming.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows. Everybody knows American healthcare is an absolute nightmare for anyone except for a scientific researcher or the health insurance companies. And everyone knows if you know about Taiwan, you might know that Taiwan has a world-class single-payer healthcare system. Not universal, but single-payer. And what that means, and stop me if I say anything wrong, Bob, but what that means is that the government engages in a lot of price setting on all things, all healthcare products and services. So everything is kind of standardized priced. There's no private competition among hospitals. Every single citizen or resident even is enrolled in the same health insurance scheme and pays based off their income. Like my health insurance premium has gone up since I've, you know, gone from job to job to job. And then when you go to a clinic or hospital, the copay fee is usually $5 US. Yeah, depending on what service you're getting. Like some specialists have had to pay more, but it's still like $18 US. It's like whatever, you know? Okay. There's such a high supply of clinics, doctors, and pharmacies even. And there's also the supply is in response to a very, very heightened demand, largely characterized by Taiwan's aging population. And even though there's some concern, you know, in like decades down the road, the whole system, similar to like American Social Security, might go bankrupt. They've made adjustments. They've raised fees on certain things. They've done a fantastic job in keeping healthcare affordable for everyone, even the lowest income people. On the flip side, doctors don't make anywhere near as much money as they do in the U.S., but that's not the point.
They still make lots, though, relatively to other people in Taiwan. They're still, like, the white-collar, very high-paying job, though, on average.
Yes, more than the average salary in Taiwan by far. I'm curious. So you were in the U.S. from your teenage years up until your mid-20s. How was your experience dealing with U.S. healthcare?
One time only, in college, some kind of burn, like some kind of oil burn from frying bacon, tiny injury, went to the clinic in my college. Copay itself was $35. I mean,
just because of a bacon burn.
Something like that. I mean, and the thing is, like, I have to schedule it. I bet there's a walk-in clinic. The fact that everything that I know of, I mean, all the services has to be scheduled.
That is a different thing. Like, yeah, with a few exceptions, I never had to actually schedule something, except for the dentist, actually, and it's usually just the next day.
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't have that many experience dealing with the U.S. health system. I always got the assumption or being told that if it's just a common cold or fever, just stay at home, rest, and let your body take care of yourself.
Yeah, whereas the Taiwanese response to it, you're feeling sick, is go to the doctor now.
Right away.
Even when it's small. Got very sick adjusting to Taiwan my first year in Taiwan with different climate, different, you know, city atmosphere. I got bronchitis.
Ooh.
First or second year in Taiwan, and then like my American instinct is to like take some supplements or medicine from a pharmacy and recover at home, and my Taiwanese coworkers were like, what the hell are you doing? Go to the doctor.
Yeah,
just go, it's fine. But and yeah, I'm so glad I did. Doctors by and large all speak fluent English, or fluent enough in terms of, you know, explaining medical things. It is convenient. It is quick. If anything, it is too accessible.
Yeah. I mean, there are basically clinics almost everywhere for all kinds of, you know, things. It's never something that I have to worry about. Like, getting sick is never something that I have to worry about. It's not going to break my bank, for sure.
Even when I had my accident and I, you know, had to be rescued from the mountain and I was in the hospital with a broken wrist. I paid extra for a more advanced surgery where like they implanted this like metal pin inside my bone.
And the cost of that alone was like 900 US, still cheaper than the US for the record. That's without insurance. A 6-day stay in the hospital with insurance, with ER care. Ambulance rides are free, by the way, for the listeners from the US. Everything from the ER to 6 days in the hospital, all the nursing that I needed and the medicine, 6,000 NT, so 200 bucks US. Yeah, which is insanely cheap for the US. I don't know if what I was charged is just the exact standard in Taiwan, or if there is a little bit of variability in terms of like the amount of care I requested in the moment. I'm not sure about that. It was totally affordable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 200 bucks for a 6-day stay in the hospital. Like, yeah, okay, sure, whatever.
Yeah, I would not want to get same mistakes or getting the major injury without a coverall insurance. So have you thought about, I mean, you just had your daughter, right? How much it will cost to have your daughter in the States?
I did do some research, and I did look up, I didn't look up the cost of the full process, the full birthing process, but I looked at the cost of C-sections. The price of a C-section in the States with insurance varies hospital to hospital, but the state I'm from was $11,000 US. That's with insurance paying some.
$11,000 to have a C-section.
In Taiwan, the price of a C-section covered by insurance elected for a more advanced stitching was about 2,000 US.
So 2,000 versus 11,000.
Yes. And that's just the C-section. The hospital stay in the States and everything else is extra. After checking out at the hospital, having stayed in the hospital for 5 days after my daughter was born, to have a baby in Taiwan, you're looking at paying 400 bucks US maybe, and that's it. And that's with a 5-day stay in the hospital at that. It's just insanely cheap for me as an American, for example.
Yes.
While it's totally reasonable to be expected to pay some amount, and it's also reasonable to be offered a variety of choices, it's still kept very, very, very affordable.
Yeah. And the fact that, I mean, like I always said, like, going to the hospital is not going to break your bank. It's not like you have to choose between food on the table or your medicine.
Which, unfortunately, still to this day, a lot of Americans do. Yes. And even though they've tried to make reforms, what it comes down to in America is the fact that private health insurance companies and private hospitals still have
so much
say. They do. And it's structural. You can't go back to the 1940s when FDR was trying to put in place some kind of like universal – or not universal, some government-run health insurance plan. You can't go back in time. The argument against – government healthcare in the US is like, oh, well, then 10 million people who work in private health insurance companies will be out of their jobs. It's like,
that's
also a big problem, but that's not a bigger problem than people not being able to access healthcare in the first place.
Right.
So the US still needs to figure all this crap out with healthcare.
It's a human right, man.
It really needs to be, yeah. It's like water or education.
Air. Clean the water.
Yeah. Like, it's weird to think that the U.S. was, like, the first country, as far as I know, to offer universal elementary school education in the 1800s all people born. They haven't also offered health care. So to be kind of the game changer in developing the country.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Just, I mean, another thing to look at healthcare is how people look at healthcare and look at COVID. Let's drop the bomb. Look at COVID in general, right?
Yeah.
People in Taiwan were freaking out the whole time, even the smallest news about COVID. But just the fact that, I mean, we have a big outbreak mid-May, and it's about six months now, and the vaccination rate is just off the roof. I mean, provided it's probably not the highest in the world, but still, I mean,
yeah, it's not the highest in the world, but the fact that Taiwan went from basically zero in May up until, I think last I read, it's like 78% first dose. I think that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
78% first dose in a matter of 6 to 7 months, whereas in the U.S., they've been vaccinating people since January, and they're still lower than Taiwan. I don't have the numbers in front of me. Goes to show how much people care about their health, like you said.
I mean, even nowadays, like the government finally offer the third dose. I guess it's just people in Taiwan in general just take these things so much more seriously than people in the States.
Yeah, they definitely take public health much more seriously. And I think a part of that is just how much people think about health because they have access to health care. And also, it can't be forgotten that Taiwan is a very aged country, so there's a lot of elderly people around. People value their elders in a kind of a more traditional kind of East Asian way. That's not so much the common cultural norm in the U.S. So they think about health more also.
Right.
I mean, Americans do too, but they often think about health in these kind of trendy ways. Let's go to the next one. There's one more reason that I wouldn't want to go to the States now. And one thing that Taiwan does better than the U.S. is transportation. This is on the whole across the board. Even as a young kid growing up in small town Massachusetts, I just never liked cars. Never have. I have a car now finally in Taiwan. I still don't like cars. And I tried for years as a teenager and as a college kid to get around day by day by bike. And you can do it, you know, but it's not the most convenient. But coming to Taiwan, people get around by scooter, by train, by MRT in a few cities, by bus if they have to. You don't need to rely on a car as your sole means of transportation. Now, again, in the U.S., there's like the exceptions of like, you know, Boston, New York, and Philadelphia. You can totally live there comfortably and rely on public transportation. But in most of the country, you need a car. And I just think it's great in Taiwan how many transportation choices you have, especially with Taiwan being a population-dense country. And also the affordability, like the high-speed rail, which America has no high-speed rail at all.
Yeah, it's weird.
Like they're going to be building one between like L.A. and Vegas, apparently. But, I mean, I don't know when that's going to finish. But, like, to go from Taipei to Kaohsiung on the high-speed rail in roughly 2 hours, maybe less, is going to cost you like $45 to $55 U.S., and like to go from my town on a Greyhound bus to Boston at the speed of a bus will cost you the same or more depending on when you buy your ticket. So transportation is often faster. It's more economical, better for the population being so dense. And in the case of scooters, it's just a lot more fun. What's your take on transportation in Taiwan?
Well, I have to say all the transportation, all the goodies are in Taipei, the metro area. There are places, there are counties and cities outside Taipei that they do have buses. Some even do have MRT, but not as convenient as they are in Taipei. Scooter is definitely the main form of transportation for majority of the people in Taiwan. Cars too, but consider the fact that it's so hard to get a parking space. I mean, you'd probably know that.
It is insane. Yes. Stupid. So getting a parking space anywhere in and around the city.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, it depends on your lifestyle, I guess. I mean, I bet there are people in Taiwan, they don't have any kind of transportation. They don't own any kind of vehicles the whole life because the public transportation is just that convenient in the area they live in. For me, I agree and disagree. I'm a car guy. I love cars. I love driving cars. I use transportation from time to time because the parking itself is so expensive and sometimes it's so hard to find a parking space.
Yeah.
But if it's up to me, though, wherever I move to in Taiwan, I would love to have a car of my own. I mean, there are still plenty of places in Taiwan outside the city that is hard to get to. A scooter would definitely do a whole lot, make your transportation a lot easier. But in general, good transportation always stays within the city area.
That is fair to say. Like, I remember my first 3 years I lived in Taoyuan in Zhongli, and while there's no MRT, well, there's an MRT there now because of the airport, but back then there wasn't. We had to rely on the buses our first year. Before we got scooters, before we actually got used to driving a scooter. I remember it not being the most ideal, taking the bus to work every few days when I had to go work at a different school. Mm-hmm. But I also do remember, again, this is me kind of being positive on Taiwan's transportation. I remember kind of being surprised that the bus comes every 5 to 10 minutes. So that was really nice. That was nice. Like I'm from a smaller area. You could be waiting 15 to 40 minutes for the bus, depending on the day. Yeah, even if you are confined to a bus and you're in a further out area, in my experience, it's still often better than the U.S. and cheaper than the U.S. The bus is 50 cents across the board. Like I think actually in Taoyuan, it was 18 NT, not 15. So it was 60 cents U.S.
Right.
Yeah, Kirby, 60 cents U.S. It definitely would not be ideal to rely on buses. Sure, you can get a decent scooter for like 20,000 NT, you know, a smaller, well-made scooter, secondhand. You can get a piece of crap for like 8,000 NT, you know.
Yeah.
Scooters can't transport goods or like, you know, boxes or like Costco groceries. But one more thing we haven't mentioned is the fact that compared to the U.S., taxis are way cheaper.
Especially Uber nowadays.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if you talk about cheap, that's in general, like the cost of living in general is a lot cheaper. So that reflects on the taxi prices as well, though.
That's also true. Yeah. The cost of living in Taiwan is cheaper, and going along with that, salaries are oftentimes lower in Taiwan.
Yeah. So, I mean, transportation, I do agree with you in some. Definitely disagree with you in some. In Taiwan, provided it's a small country and small island, so there's not much of long distance travel. Domestic flight is so rare and so few. In the States, domestic flights is very common. And the fact that, going back to a little bit about safety, the infrastructure for roads, travel safety, transportation safety, goes hand in hand with how well you look at transportation as a whole.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I really do agree with you some, but disagree with you. And, another thing I want to mention. People in the state, they're so used to commute, like half an hour, 40 minutes commute.
Yep, that's true.
You would not ask a person in Taiwan to commute 40 minutes. People in Taiwan, a lot of people won't even walk 10 minutes. So for you, it's convenient because probably you're so used to the fact that it was long commute and it takes time, you know, and in Taiwan, the travel distance, you know, becomes so comparatively shorter and probably something that you find a lot more convenient. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess another part of that is that if people are largely driving scooters, they don't want to be driving them for a long time. If you are used to mostly driving scooters, then I can imagine, especially in inclement weather, that driving a scooter for a long time is going to be viewed as burdensome. I still think that, you know, Taiwan's transportation culture with, you know, scooters, public transportation, and trains, like, it is so much better than in most of America where you have to rely on a car. Because in America, if you don't have a car, you can't afford a car, you're basically screwed.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's we'll get into something associated with that with the fifth topic. But I hear you that there's different transportation cultures in both countries. It's not just that Taiwan's totally better. There's different ways why both sides are better or worse. All right, on to the last one. The fifth thing that I think that Taiwan does better than the U.S., and it's weird to phrase this as a way something that Taiwan does, but Taiwan lacks extreme poverty compared to the way the U.S. has more people living in poverty. And I'm not saying Taiwan doesn't have poor people. It obviously does. You can visit some kind of more rundown neighborhoods in Wanhua or Datong in Taipei. There are poorer townships in Taidong, Pingdong, even the mountainous areas of Hsinchu and Miaoli. But on a day-to-day basis, if you're walking around and going through the day through a city, you are generally not going to be approached by a panhandler or somebody begging for money. On the MRT, you are not going to be interrupted by somebody giving a speech asking for money, giving some kind of sob story about being a recovering drug addict or needing to provide money for their pets, whatever it may be. And if you look at the numbers, Taiwan has by percentage substantially fewer people stuck in homeless or dire situations than the U.S. does. I don't know. Did you notice, Bob, where exactly were you in the U.S. when you were living there?
I was in two places, Indiana and Idaho.
Okay, Indiana and Idaho, two very, very much like regular America places.
Sure.
Did you notice any extreme poverty or anything that was, shocking when you were there?
Personally, not as much. But the thing is, in this one, I will probably have a little more difficult time to have a very meaningful conversation because I live in my own bubble. I bet, from the news, like, the wealth gap is so much bigger in the States than in Taiwan. Doesn't mean it's not big in Taiwan still. The thing is, we talk about poverty. I believe people in Taiwan or the government in Taiwan in general have much stronger support system than the ones in the States. So
definitely.
And there are still quite a big of social issues because of poverty. The Grade Six project, right? The poverty project, right?
Yeah. Some of our Grade Six students do a research project about addressing poverty in Taiwan.
Right.
Right.
So, yes, it's something that a lot of students, they probably know the existence of the issue, but not really familiar with how that happened or the extent of it or the effect of that on the family and the kids. And which is the one thing that how the project was approached, to have the students develop the sympathy and all that. But the thing is, I personally think, sure, poor people, there are people in poverty. It's a much better support systems than the ones in the U.S. But the ones in the U.S. also vast difference between the states. So, that you have to have your more input to that on that.
Yeah, definitely. I've lived in Massachusetts in upstate New York. I haven't lived really anywhere else in the U.S., but of course I've read tons in the news about there being, sprawling homeless camps in a lot of cities in California or a lot of cities in Florida and Texas. And the government, and I'm not sure how structurally or how much of a structural issue this is with the U.S. government, not being successful in addressing poverty. And the way that Taiwan I think it's fair to say that, that Taiwan has had a lot of success in addressing poverty across the past century. It wasn't any more than 50 years ago when a lot of Taiwan was still quite poor.
So that's general.
Yeah, that's in general. If we're talking extreme poverty, you just don't see it. You will see some examples of people living in extreme poverty and homelessness, but nothing compared to the magnitude you see in the U.S. I think that there's a few reasons beyond this, behind this. Number one, Taiwanese society compared to the U.S. is still largely revolves around the family, the extended family as well. Families generally take care of each other. And if anybody is down in their luck, you can very often in circumstances fall back on your extended family in a way that you can't do that in the U.S. Taiwan also has a pretty easy system of rent access, whereas in the U.S. you can very easily be denied a rental apartment based off who you are or your financial history. It doesn't work the same way in Taiwan. Now, that's not to say that there's not other kind of biases in the system, but it's much easier to find a place to live if you can afford it in the moment. Thirdly, there's a lot of smaller charities in different cities and also religious-based charities in Taiwan as well. And there are in the U.S. too. I've just clicked on a website called the Borgen Project, which kind of does poverty analyses across different countries in the world. And there's, if you search child poverty in Taiwan, the headline reads, "Child poverty in Taiwan is almost eliminated." There's decent systems of food aid in Taiwan. And of course, there's still just cheaper food in general in Taiwan, both at the stores and at restaurants. Apparently, only 6% of Taiwanese children are living in poverty compared to, this is again on the website, 16% in Canada and still higher in the US. There's one more issue I want to bring up about poverty in Taiwan is that when you do see it, it's very often the elderly. I almost never have come across a homeless family in Taipei, whereas you will see that in the U.S., sadly.
Right.
Yes.
Elderly in terms of poverty, maybe. But you do understand the previous generation. Well, if we talk about elderly, that's previous two generations.
Yeah.
They've been through, you know, all the hardship when they were growing up. So they tend to live more of a frugal life than the generations after. So looks can be deceiving. Doesn't mean there aren't elderly who are living in poverty. But again, in general, there's much better social support than the ones in the States. I mean, I know Social Security is a huge topic in the States, and depends on who's talking about it. Like, a lot of times people say that, you know, how much it has to be eliminated or how much it has to be control the spending. But there are talks in Taiwan about that topic still, but it was never about if Social Security was something that it was something needed. It was just like how to best spend the money to help those, you know, who need the support in Taiwan.
Yeah, that is a fair point. Like, it's not that people are arguing about whether you should or shouldn't. They're arguing about how.
Right.
And I guess that is fair to say, though some people might look rough on the outside, their situation might not be as dire as you could perceive it. So I pulled up an article I found from the news source, New Bloom Mag. And apparently in Taiwan, in total, there's about 2,500 homeless people in the country only. That is based off surveys by a few different charities and welfare organizations. That is an insanely low number compared to the U.S. And again, that's proportionate to population. But like, I'm sure that there's that number of homeless people in most cities in the U.S., even small cities. There's one interesting problem with homeless people in Taipei, especially getting access to services, that I thought was really kind of strange, because you can only officially be counted as homeless if you don't have a home you could go back to.
So that may skew the data.
It does, because you have homeless around Wanhua in Taipei who have hukou in some places like Yunlin, Jai, or Tainan, or whatever.
Yes.
Who moved years and years and years ago to work and technically could go back to wherever they originally were born or came from. But they choose not to for a variety of reasons and can't access certain services in the city, because they're not viewed as technically actually homeless.
Yeah,
I thought it was a bit of a weird situation, and I hope it changed, but I hope it changes. But you talked about Taiwan having much less of a wage gap, and I think that probably is true. Did you notice that in the U.S. when you were there at all?
I mean, I kind of know that. I never actually lived long enough to say, to experience that myself. But put it this way, salary as a first year teacher in the state of Idaho at the time was $30,500.
That is not much.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, like 46, 47th of the out of all 50 states at the time.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's enough for me, a single person, no family, and I don't spend a whole lot of tons on things. So at the time, it was definitely fine, you know.
Yeah.
But when I come back to Taiwan, start working for the school, I make significantly, relatively speaking, more affordable money, salary, than in Taiwan than in the States.
Yes. Yeah, and also it can be mentioned that, you know, Taiwanese often live with their families until they're much older than in the U.S. So
yeah, you don't say.
Yeah.
This will go to the topic later on, what America does better than Taiwan, so.
Ah, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, then that allows people to kind of like accrue savings in more in a faster way, and have more their income can stretch farther when they're starting out.
Right. And I mean, I'm not really a big financial investing kind of person.
Yeah, neither am I.
Yeah. So been making big buck was never something that I wanted to do. I mean, it would be nice to have a lot of money, but still, it wasn't my life goal, at least not at this point. So the money I made in the States was barely higher than the one I made in Taiwan. That's a scary thought, that a single person make almost exactly the same as, almost exactly the same as in Taiwan.
Yeah, with the cost of living being so much higher in the U.S., yeah. So then that just kind of goes to show that that's an example of how people in the U.S. not necessarily would fall into abject poverty like homelessness, but like people can't necessarily escape the lower middle income trap. Isn't it said something like that, like over half of Americans cannot afford a $400 emergency expense?
Something like that.
Yeah. It's crazy. Whereas most Taiwanese really do save a lot of money out of habit and culture, mm-hmm. too. They just don't fall into abject poverty as much. And the last thing I'll say about this topic is my wife's reaction to visiting the States. So when she visited the States years ago for the first time, we went to my hometown, Boston, and Niagara Falls. I asked her, you know, what she thought about the whole thing, and then she said straight up that she didn't like Boston. And I'm like, why? And she said, well, you never really felt safe because there was always someone, like, begging for money nearby where you're walking. And right. I'm like, oh yeah. And then she commented once that, like, one time she saw what looked like a 20-year-old, you know, basically a kid doing that, you know, what, teenager or 20-year-old. And I'm like, wow, yeah, yeah, that's just, that's something you see. And me growing up, you just, like, there was always just a homeless guy around. It's not something, and for, it's unfortunately not something that someone thinks much about. You just walk past a homeless guy. Whereas that was the, that was her, her lasting impression of Boston was homeless people. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of a shame that that's what you take away from this great city.
Yeah. But
it's also a shame of Boston not solving the problem.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that that's pretty much all I have to say about this topic, actually.
I mean, like I said, I live in my own bubble, and it's definitely something that, as a whole, sure, I agree. But I'm pretty sure I probably missed out a whole tons of factual information that reflects the reality. So,
as much as I've kind of talked down the U.S., again, Taiwan still does have issues with poverty. Taiwan still does have some poor towns, and there's still a lot of poverty amongst the Aboriginal communities in their villages.
Sure.
There's those systemic issues, but in terms of the abject poverty that you see, you just don't see it. It never gets as bad as it does get for some people in the U.S.
Yeah, they won't ever be a 10th city in any of the city in Taiwan.
Sure. You would never see that. Never would see that. I think that's probably a good place to leave it, Bob. We've talked for quite a while.
Yes. And I'm too sorry that I ramble on a lot of things. And
Bob, I'm the one that rambles often. You did fine.
All right.
Bob, it has been a pleasure talking to you. It's been great having you in the podcast, hearing about a lot of your perspectives as a Taiwanese who did live in the U.S. and calling me out of my crap when I don't know what I'm talking about even.
Yeah, that goes back to me too. I mean, I have my perspective, not always factual, but a lot of this just personal experience and observation. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's definitely been really good having you on the podcast. Thanks so much for coming on. And I look forward to recording part two with you in the future.
Oh, yeah. And hopefully there's so many things I want to talk about the States in general, but I'll save it for that.
All right, definitely. Save it for then. All right, talk to you next time, Bob.
All right, talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
And that's where we'll leave it today on the episode of the Dear Taiwan podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in and making it to the end. I know we brought up some contentious topics, so if you have any opinions you want to share, disagreements, or agreements, feel free to send us an email at deartaiwanpodcast@gmail.com, and I'll be very, very happy to read some of your comments or questions in the next episode. Later on, in a few weeks, we'll be posting an episode, Things America Does Better Than Taiwan, so make sure to tune in for that. This has been Teacher Joseph with our special guest Bob on the Dear Taiwan podcast.